Welcome to the award-winning Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, covering metaphysics, ETs, shamanism, and channeling. Here you will find spiritual inspiration from today's thought leaders, along with cutting-edge insights from our interstellar brothers and sisters and ancient shamanic wisdom. Now, here's a new episode of Dare to Dream with your host, Debbie Dashinger.
Welcome to Dare to Dream, a podcast on the edge of consciousness where science, spirit, and the unknown collide. What if your animals have been communicating with you all along, sending warnings, healing messages, even reflecting the wounds you haven't healed in yourself? Today, legendary animal communicator Joan Ranquette reveals the unseen language between species, how animals mirror our emotional field, and why understanding their consciousness could transform not only your relationship with pets, but your understanding of life itself. I am very excited for the first time to welcome Joan to the show. So great to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I first read one of your books a couple of years ago. Somebody had turned me on to one of your books. I've had cats. I have dogs now. And it's always been a group of dogs. I love animals since I'm a kid, like madly. And so what you talk about, I think, is very important. And I don't even think animals are from here. I think animals are originally from another galaxy and planets with great intelligence and emotional wisdom. So when you, Joan, speak about instinct as a kind of intelligence that we humans have dulled, could animals be holding this primordial wisdom field, almost like an ancient earth consciousness that may be essential to humanity's spiritual evolution?
I think 150%. I mean, I feel like that's why we have to listen to them. You know, we have to understand a little more about not just how it fits in with our psychology, but who they are as individuals, because each one of them could unlock that whole primordial field, knowledge, wisdom.
You have a new book out. We've got a little company, and congratulations on that. And that's called Animal Chakra Healing, involving the chakras with your animals. And you introduce this very revolutionary idea of an eighth chakra that is tied to an animal's ecosystem, their morphic resonance, and even the collective fields. Can you unpack how our homes, our emotional atmospheres, and even the field of a family can affect an animal's well-being, and what the animals may be teaching us about relational coherence?
Yeah, it's kind of one of my favorite topics. So when we think about like our energy field, so we have our own chakras and we have our own aura, they also have their own chakras and their own aura. But as a pack of coyotes or a pack of dogs or a colony of cats or a pride of cats or even the bigger cats or a herd of horses, you can see that each of their energy fields locks in to create basically a bigger field, what would be called the morphic resonance. And Dr. Rupert Sheldrake, a biochemist from the UK, had done studies where he wrote a book called Dogs Know When Their Person Is Coming Home. And he had done all these studies where he had put a time-stamped camera in someone's home and then a time-stamped camera at their office. And normally if they left at 5 p.m., he would call them and say, okay, leave at 3:17. And when they left at 3:17, the dog would get up and go to the door. So it showed over and over and over. You almost don't have to read the book to know that that is on repeat many, many times, that each random time he told somebody to leave their desk, their animal got up and went to the door. And so I've taken people on wildlife trips for years, and I've just absolutely watched how even a pride of lions can come in as a unit and be invisible to a herd of antelope. And you know, that's how they hunt. They speak in that field of energy. And then that group of antelope has their own field of energy that connects and operates off of fear for the moment, until they get to safety. And if none of their members are lost, then it's a brand new day. And they don't dwell in that field of energy, right? They are absolutely in their rest and digest, and the babies start playing again. And so watching those two fields of energy, there's even a bigger field at work there. And our homes are really like that. I have dogs, cats, and horses, and we're all one big family, and yet we're individuals in this morphic resonance. So our individuality is what makes up the signature, if you will, of this particular household. And everybody's home has their own signature based on the individuals, and then that field of energy has its own emotional, spiritual, energetic signature in the Akashic records, if you will. And it's so we have our own, and it has its own intelligence and its own way of moving about on the planet. So it's, to me, it's endlessly fascinating and fun.
This endlessly fascinating. And as you're speaking, I'm thinking also, of course, murder of crows or a flock
Yes.
of geese who fly in formation. And how do they know when the goose who is at the apex has become tired and wants to retire and go to the end, and the next one takes over to continue, that they fly in formation?
Because
And so
that
it
just
is.
has its own intelligence, and that doesn't take away from individuality, you know. And I think that that's where there's, you know, I think that that's when we think about the collective consciousness, that might be a fear, the ego's fear of I'll lose my hold in this, but at the same time, you have a bigger role in this.
That they have soul contracts, animals who come into your life that you've been around before in different incarnations, or they have a specific mission with you in this life.
I think all of the above. I feel like everybody that lives in my house, and right now it is including flies since I live with horses and it's about to rain, that we've known each other. I mean, it's so familiar to move into my household, right? Like, even though we might have to potty train or break up a little cat fight or whatever, it is, we've all known each other forever and ever and ever. And I joke that this one, Penelope, she didn't mean to come in as a dog this time. She's always been a cat. Not always, but you know, she's been a cat many times. I had a horse years ago. I'm a Leo and she was an Aries, and we had these moments. And we had a few years where we were a little like, it just wasn't going great. And one day I was so frustrated, and I heard as loud as I'm speaking to you, I heard, "It's really hard for me to take direction from you. I've been your mother in many lifetimes." And I thought, oh. So it changed the whole dynamic of our relationship for her to have that wisdom. And I guess I had more respect, or I didn't realize I didn't, you know, but it shifted everything.
Your dog who's with you right now, and you say didn't realize he was a dog and has had many lifetimes as a cat, does he show certain cat-like behavior?
Yeah, she's very cat-like. I mean, even this is usually where a cat would sit, right? She's not small. She's not a, you know, she's a mid-sized dog.
Oh, well, I wore my animal print just for
I
you, just
noticed. I
I
love
had
it.
to represent. And it's very beautiful, and I think important what you say. You know, I have two dogs now. My dog Shelby is definitely major soulmate, like beyond. And I constantly understand her, and I constantly don't understand how other people don't understand her. And she's got some quirky things, like occasionally she likes to go into the bathtub and drink from the tub. And other people don't know, but I know, and she's very patient. She doesn't bark, she doesn't moan. She will just sit in proximity to something, and I know, or I sometimes know she's really thirsty right now, or I can tell when other animals are not feeling well, and we'll use a frequency device on them, which is really effective. And it always surprises me that people aren't aware of what's happening with animals or their animal, because I feel very strongly. I think they communicate loudly, is what I'm saying.
I agree. And but I think that we've been conditioned to believe that we can't understand them. So we make it a big mystery, we make it even more confusing. And even when you look at the simplicity of telepathy, which is the transference of pictures, words, and feelings, the more we're second guessing ourselves, even with are they understanding me? We're creating that just that mixed message. So not only do people not understand their animals, which, like you said, is kind of kooky because it's so obvious, but they are making it harder for their animals to understand them.
Really good point about telepathy because I've had Dr. Diane Hennessy Powell on the show. She's
Oh,
a
cool.
scientist on the telepathy tapes. And it is very, for me, as a metaphysician, as someone who's into extraterrestrials and all that, and feeling the idea of the up-leveling that hopefully all of us, but at least many of us, are going to have, and I think are already going through this piece you're bringing in about the animals. Also is essential that as we upgrade our gifts and they really start to come online, we really start to use them, the animals will have way more access to us and we to them, which is quite beautiful because then that's a whole nother really intimate relationship in our life.
It is, and it's intimate, and it's necessary, right? Like, when I take people on wildlife trips, I take them every few years to a place called the Sheldrake Trust, which is different than Dr. Sheldrake. So the Sheldrake Trust in Kenya is where a lot of the orphan elephants go to live and spend time. Kind of regroup, heal, and then they have the opportunity, they have the choice to mo move out into the wild. They go walk out in the wild every day, and sometimes eventually they don't come home, or they stay out like a teenager for a few days, and then they come back and they test the waters, and then eventually they go. And but they always come back and they bring their babies, and they show off what they're doing to the keepers and to the other. It's almost like they model for the other orphans, like, this is going to be you. And then sometimes they even bring in the wild elephants who have been injured. Like, they know, and those wild elephants trust these zoo keepers, which there's it's in the land of poachers, but they trust this human is different. And to me, that's where we should be going with everything. That's that I can still be wild and you can still do you, but here's where we get to interact.
I love elephants. I love the idea of elephants. I love their deep emotion and sensitivity and their way of mourning when one of them dies. And I really long to meet an elephant. So, on these Kenya experiences you take people on, what other animals do you get to meet and do you get to interact with the animals themselves?
Well, where I've taken people, they are wild. So it's funny though, I do little meditations to bring in our energy field and be in full appreciation. And all the guides want to marry me because we have so many animals, and they're like, oh, we could do very well together. It's like, okay. Well, I do have some horses and dogs and cats back home that need me too, but I'll be back. We've had some amazing interactions with lions, with cheetahs, with baby cheetahs, with even hyenas. We've had, but there's a place I also take people, and I'll have to send you the information, called Tula Tula, that's in South Africa, and I go there at this point once a year. And those elephants are a pretty cohesive herd that we communicate with, and we've done EFT, emotional freedom technique tapping with. Like, we've done some amazing work with and for them, and they've helped us. So it's been a very powerful exchange at Tula Tula.
Sure, people who are listening will want that info as well. We can put that in the show notes. And you brought in a piece I'm so grateful you did because I know it's in your book, Emotional Freedom Technique, EFT. And so it's a big deal. I've been doing EFT tapping, gee, I don't know, 11 years. And I know here, like we know the spots, right? I could go through everything. But I wonder for an animal, like for a dog, for instance, how would I know where to tap? And would you say something over the animal as you tapped?
100%. So Penelope is a professional,
Okay,
and she
Penelope.
always knows that if I'm doing a podcast, there may be tapping. So, like people, I had studied acupressure for animals, and I learned tapping in 2001, and then I kind of put it all together in about 2006. And so, it's very similar spots, and all of the points are built for calming. And so, yeah, you want to say the challenging situation while on the calming point. So, for example, she gets anxiety in the car. So I would say, I have anxiety. I have anxiety. I don't like the car. I get scared. I get scared. I am scared. I am scared. I don't like the car. I get a little car sick. I get nervous. I don't like it. But I am always safe. I am always safe. I am always safe. I could try to get in the car. I'll get in the car. I am safe. I am safe. I am confident. I am safe. And I am safe.
Thank you, Penelope. That was beautiful.
And she just took a big breath. And she's her little nose, she's getting curious again. But it's so powerful for them because they live in that instinct, that fight or flight. And so if we can bring that nervous system down, then they're not questioning whether it's going to work or not, right? It just works.
Great. So much simpler than we are. I find that
Yeah.
even with the frequency machine that we use, it's not always successful on me, but I put it on the dogs no matter what's going on. And 20 minutes later, 40 at most, something is shifting for them. Sometimes they're completely healed. I'm going to try this. Penelope with the very cat-like eyes, I noticed.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try this. And so people also with cats can do this with horses,
Horses. I started
goats.
with horses. Yeah. Goats, everything. And then with cats, or let's say you have a head shy animal, you might air tap but I like to imagine them in my mind. And that's what we do with the elephants. And I'm tapping on the inside of the eye. I'm very clear that I'm tapping that point, and that intention carries through because each of those points have a very powerful effect. Bladder 1, triple heater 23, stomach 1. Like, it's either the beginning or the ending of a meridian. And each of those meridians are so powerful and really affect some part of our system that can get riled up, and so it just brings it down.
Oh, wow. It helps me even watching you do it to Penelope. So it's that relaxing, but I use it a lot. I believe in it. I think it's a great tool, like a must actually, to have in the tool belt. And when we're talking about this anxiety and the tension or the things that some of these elephants have been through, I know in your book you write that survival patterns can live in species memory. It's like
100%.
humans with lineage, ancestry, right?
Yeah.
Even cellular memory. What about rescued or traumatized animals? Do they carry inherited energetic imprints the way humans carry ancestral wounding? And how can they be healed?
Definitely. And if you look at, like, even, if you rescued a first generation unferal cat, right? You're gonna have the wounding of the DNA that we don't like humans, right? And Mustangs, even captive born Mustangs, you're dealing with a certain DNA that a lot of times you just have to build that much more trust. And I think, again, like you were saying, it's this is so much more simple. It is also more simple in that if you look at anxiety, anxiety is really just fear, anger, and sadness. And when we just keep it that simple for animals, and we don't go into regret or longing or all those things, just so simple, and we move to confidence, safety, joy, it really shifts. So we have, like, I always say that their superpower is instinct, but our superpower is logic. If we applied our logic to creating a simple approach for them, we could literally heal the planet because they would lift up humanity in a way that we can't even imagine.
Also, in your animal chakra healing book, you break down various animals, which I loved because I do shamanic. I'm a shamanic practitioner. And every year I choose three animals and I take people through their medicine for the year. So this year, because of the energy of the year, I'm working with owl, jaguar, and of course, horse medicine. Because we're in the year of the horse. And I find the medicine shamanically that these animals offer us is so powerful. And then people learn this and they'll go through their year and something's going on, another tool, and they'll say, oh, I'm in a place of opportunity and making decisions and I'm feeling a little wonky. Let me bring in jaguar. Because the jaguar is not going to sit somewhere and see something interesting off in the distance and
No.
say, should I? How would that work out? Do I have
Uh-uh.
enough paws? You know, all this stuff, it, like liquid, and it
Yeah.
would be there. So I really love how you brought in the different animals to consider what they're like and how we can work with them. And you also include scalar wave healing, energy balancing, and that you say you have reports of dramatic shifts in health, in behavior. Can you talk about the most challenged conventional assumptions about healing and what animals actually understand about energy medicine? That humans are just beginning to recover. I mean, you can go real deep into these healing modalities and a situation that you've seen and experienced that was really extraordinary.
We had one on Friday, Saturday. So I have a school for animal communication and energy healing, and once a year I have a huge, it's actually 16 days long. Not There were only 9 hardcore people, but there were like 25 for different modules. And the last 3 days we did the energy fields and the scalar wave, and I found this donkey rescue that had just brought in 41 donkeys from a kill pen in Texas, and they were up in Ojai. And so, oh, here comes Elsa, is the baby. Hi, Elsa.
Hello.
Are you here to talk about Scalar Wave? She had a little scalar also. Anyway, so we had been working with the scalar wave and the energy fields and everything as a group. And so we went to the rescue in Ojai on Saturday morning, and it was a very, so many of those horses and donkeys had had horrific trauma. And you want to talk about compounded trauma. When the kill pen in, not to be morbid, but I think the truth needs to be out. The kill pen in Texas has 3,000 horses or donkeys a month, a week, that go to Mexico for slaughter. And so the fear and the wounding, it's so compounded. And then several of the donkeys there had one had been raped repeatedly by, just she was by herself with three males. One had been tramp a horse had been trampled in the horse trailer. And so those two stood out very much. Then there were a mini horse and a Mustang that wouldn't come near people. And obviously, as a rescue, I mean, and a sanctuary, the hope is they can adopt some of these animals out, but also they have to be able to interact with veterinarians, all the things. So we did a group scalar, and we start with running energy. So we move into their field of energy and feel into their body. So that's almost like it feels almost like a medical intuition. It feel, you're kind of getting a sense of where blocks are. Then we go in and clear the chakras, and then we bring in the scalar wave energy and allow it to release on a cellular level that perfect right cell. And so I had 12 people positioned around the farm, and I spoke, through speakers, and I led the group through it. And afterwards, even the 25 or 30 other animals were all asleep, and everybody was so relaxed, but more than relaxed, like I still want a result in terms of a shift with the behavior. And the horse that had been trampled came up to the people, and then I did some EFT tapping with her and basically brought her back into her body from being, she left her body when she was so injured. And I kind of do a little, retrieval through the tapping with animals. And then, the one that had been raped ended up joining the herd of other donkeys, which they had never seen her be with the other donkeys. And the two, the Mini and the Mustang, came to the fence to meet the people that worked on them. I mean, the people that own the sanctuary couldn't believe it. And she's a big jeweler. She ended up bringing us all little silver angels. It was unbelievable. It was magical. So it was very, that level of going in at the cellular level hit the morphic resonance, and the whole 7 acres of animals went next level relaxation and trust and safety. So it was very powerful.
Oh, what a beautiful story. When you did the scalar energy, were you using an EES system or something else?
It's a guided meditation that I learned from Dr. Valerie Hunt, who created this technique. And she was one of the first people to create an aura machine where you could measure the aura at UCLA. So I had been her person telling her about animal chakras in the 90s when she was creating this aura machine.
I have a couple of, I don't know, they may be very pedestrian questions, but just having dogs at this point in my life, I don't understand why, for instance, when dogs eat and ostensibly they're full, why do they want to keep eating and eating? What is going on there? They're like obsessed with food.
I mean, I think if you look at, their lineage from the wolf, There isn't, it's not that there's lack and scarcity, but if there's food, they're gonna bring it for their family. They're gonna consume it, so they want to find it. And then they have periods where they don't eat if they're not hungry. And I think part of it is our feeding patterns. It's like we've kind of addicted them to these. We're gonna eat at 5. We're gonna eat at 7 in the morning. And the truth is, in the wild, they would eat when they're hungry, but they would eat everything.
Would get quite full all at once so
Yeah.
that it kept them going for a while.
It kept them going for a while, and often, I mean, it's gross, but the mother, to us, it's perfect for them. The mother would eat as much as she
Masticate.
could and then throw it up and feed her babies.
Right, like a bird.
Yeah. Yeah.
I totally get that 100%. And for folks out there who have an animal, and they take that animal to a groomer, which I think is very important. Or let's say there's a dog sitter, or you're going to leave for a while and someone's going to stay in your house. How can you know if your animal was extremely happy with them? I mean, a bad experience, I assume you would know, but still, there's a big spectrum of what could occur for a dog or a cat or whatever you is in your care, your guardian of. So how can you be really sure of what happened while you were away with the groomer or the sitter?
Well, I'm lucky I can just do telepathy, but and often my classes will out my house sitter on whatever they've done. One time a horse of mine said, "Oh, I love to get the green grass." I'm like, "Well, there's no green grass." I told the house sitter this. She goes, "Oh my God, she got out." So it was so I'm able to out my house sitters very quickly. So they're very well behaved with me. But that said, I think you come home and you see their sense of happiness. And for me, I want my animals to feel, to me, it's sustainable to have an animal be independent and be able to go with this person and enjoy the experience. And so when I see my animal feeling confident and happy, then I know they've had a good time.
That's interesting. You're giving me an idea I never thought about. If my partner, which happened this morning, takes both dogs on a walk and I'm not there, the dog who's been mine since she was a baby, Shelby, will not walk. So she'll just sit there and she will not move. She won't budge. And he ends up bringing her home. And I just thought about all these stories you're telling me and the audience that I can use this on her, and go through all
Yeah.
the challenges that, if I go, I'm leaving my mommy behind. I don't really know what is going on for her. I don't want to be apart from my mommy. I feel safer or better when she's very outgoing, so it's such strange behavior. But I can probably run through some ideas that might make sense. And then come to, oh, it's fun to walk with people who are safe
Yeah.
and, care for me.
I'm
It's,
always safe.
I'm always safe. Yeah, this is an incredible conversation. Have horses, dogs, cats, whatever animal ever delivered guidance to you, Joan, during a difficult life passage?
Yeah, 100%. I have had some big things. I've lost both my parents. Actually, one of the things about I have 3 cats right now, and they're 16 and a half, and they were born on my farm. I live in Santa Clarita now, California, but I lived in outside of Seattle. And my dad was dying, and I had these kittens that were born on the farm, and I was so sad. I was in a divorce, and my dad was dying, and my mom had died, and they used me like a human trampoline, and I have to say, it was the joy that they just brought in there, just kittenness. I mean, that's an obvious one, but there have been plenty of times where It's really it just seems to always be about like find the joy. You can grieve and be joyful. And that to me is like the best medicine there is.
That's very powerful. I love that idea. And I have to say, my dog does the same for me, Shelby, because it's not so much a life passage, but I'm in a work mode, I'm in a zone, and all of a sudden I'll walk in and see her just, I mean, either she looks so deeply into my eyes that it just, oh, my heart melts, or she does something that is absolutely hilarious. And that is so beautiful to feel all that joy, to start laughing, have all that mirth, and you cannot replace that with anything.
No, it's true.
Well, we're going to take a quick pause here, and if something inside of you is activating right now, you can definitely get Joan's new book on Amazon or any bookstore, and also check her out to see what programs and travel she's offering. It's Joan Ranquette, RANQUETE.com. JoanRanquette.com. And also, if you feel like your next step is finding out about what kind of star seed am I, what galaxy am I from, species, all of that, you can also find out your galactic ancestry. Go to debbiedashinger.com/starseed. All the URLs will be in the show notes. We just launched a 9-week channeling course. So if you'd like to work with 13 renowned channelers and learn how to channel yourself, but also receive channeling from them, enrollment is still open, but don't delay because we had orientation on April 23rd and we're moving on. So definitely join us. This first session was unreal, incredible. And we're talking about up-leveling gifts, and I think channeling is light language is part of it for all of us. Go to thechannelingcourse.com. And finally, if you're feeling this conversation, don't just watch it, interact with it. Comment, subscribe, like, hype these videos. Every time you do that, you take just a moment out of your life for what you're receiving from us today. It helps us to reach more souls who are ready for this work and ready for this message. Joan, also, in talking about transitions, what have animals taught you about death, about transitions that most of us miss?
Well, I think one of the things that's really valuable is when, I think that there are times when you're questioning, like, oh my God, is it time? The animal is always going to let you know. It's no mystery. What they often are doing in what I call a state of grace is completing unfinished business, maybe with other litter mates, maybe with someone else from that they were with before, maybe other galaxies, but they also have to complete their journey here. And so that's a really important you get to be kind of the midwife of them moving into that next level, wherever that is, whatever you believe that is. And so being patient with yourself and trusting that your animal is going to tell you is one of the most important things you could do. I had a very scary experience last night. I wasn't going to say anything, but my own cat was very sick, and I was in the hospital all night. And at one point, the vet came to me and said, "You can always, choose to do humane euthanization." And I said, "I would never do something without his permission, first and foremost, and secondly, I would want his siblings, his actual biological brother and sister with him and the other dogs, and be able to take him down to the horses." So, thank you, but no thank you. And he's still among us today, but I know he's doing his thing. And sometimes it really is they're gathering their strength to get better, and sometimes they're making their rounds of things we don't even know. And so it's important to honor that process.
It's huge. It's huge. We're so fortunate. Both our previous dogs died in the house with us. I'm really grateful for that. And it's hard. I think it's hard. You know, you're doing the right thing as their great love and their guardian.
Yeah.
Oh, but it's just not an easy separation. And
No.
are you able, Joan, telepathically, even though an animal passes, to still communicate with them?
Oh yeah, that was part of the training that we did, the 16-day training I did in person the last 2.5 weeks, 3 days of it, and then I also have an online 10-week course, is Animals in Transition, and it's communicating with animals who have crossed over.
Amazing gift. Because that's what got me and us through the loss of our dogs. Just, I think when somebody does telepathy and can be the conduit like that, you know when it's your animal's voice. You
Yeah.
know that's absolutely their personality. It's outstanding and uncanny. And so it was difficult because I had some questions too. And I had a little bit of guilt I didn't understand because I had gone to the bathroom and closed the door. And I heard this huge bang on the door. And when I opened it, our dog Oliver was laying, he had an enlarged heart, and he was laying on his side. Oh my gosh, it was very clear he was struggling and that it was bad and just all the things, you know. My partner thankfully immediately said, help him across the Rainbow Bridge, do the shamanic work. Thank God, because to step into power in a moment like that is
Right.
a complete shift with the experience. And still afterwards, I wondered so many times about my door being closed and what if it wasn't closed. And you know, the telepathy person was so wonderful. To be able almost like a camera, explain what had happened and also explain what had happened in his body at that moment. And also talk about our other dog who's not with us either any longer, Ziggy, was talk because she said Oliver was saying, what's happening? And Ziggy was able to explain, oh, you know, you're coming up out of your body. I see. And I think you're passing. And they were very close. So it's like, oh, all this stuff around a passage like that, it is major.
Yeah.
Every time I see somebody on social media post a picture of their animal and we just lost them, my heart for them just, oh,
Me too. Me too.
like love, love, love.
Yeah.
And
And
of
then
all the beings, Elsa, this is for you.
Yeah, she's like, I'm still young and sassy. So, did you want to say hi? You could say
I would
hi.
like to say hi. You're gorgeous.
Elsa, come up and say
Oh, here we go. Oh my
hi.
God. Here we go. The hug. Oh, Elsa. That is so great. You just love your mommy. Yes, you do. I could see those eyes. Oh, for
She's a
sure.
very good girl.
Thank you for coming to be with us, Elsa. I'm going to ask your mommy a question, but you can chime in too. Of all the beings that you've communicated with, wild or domestic, which encounter left you feeling humbled before the mystery of their consciousness?
On the one hand, all of them, but on the other hand, I think some of my experiences in the wild, where it's like they could be swimming in the whole ocean, and I have a little name for one, little a boat I was on. I used to take people on dolphin trips, and we used to call in this dolphin named Sushi, and she would come. And she would be all, she'd literally flap. I mean, it was, you can't even believe it. Like, how could this even be? Year after year after year, I could call in Sushi. And I think that is one of the most, it just reminds me of the whole mystery. Like, even though I know I've been doing this for a living for 30 years, to sit out in a boat and call in a dolphin is crazy.
humbling. And
Very humbling.
little further along the line of the mystery with animals, do they sense spirits, timelines, unseen energies, even galactic intelligences?
Yeah, I mean, I think just like with people, there's so I had this one situation where this woman called me because her cat had crossed, and she'd only had the cat for a few months, and she had really fallen hard for him. And she had a bobcat rescue, so she was very invested in cats, and she knew cats better than anyone. And so she had taken the cat for an autopsy, but I didn't know that. And so when I first communicated with the cat, I said, "This is not a cat. This is, I talked about his personality and this and that." So she had a complete, she knew I was communicating with him. And then I said, "This was not a cat, right? This was an angel that came in to absolutely be with you because he knew how powerful you were and he wanted to touch you and help you." And she started crying and she said she had an autopsy and that most of his digestive organs didn't even exist. And so the vet was like, "This is beyond a mystery how this cat even functioned." And so, that's where then I get the scientific proof that like that is true. And so, yeah, beings, galactical beings, elementals, they see them, but sometimes they are them in a dog form. Elsa's being a little takeover artist. Anyway, yeah, I see it a lot. Sometimes I see horses that I think should have been dolphins. Like they carry that galactical energy. And so it's amazing. I mean, for the most part, I go in and help people with their big challenges, like my reactive dog or my cat is, fighting with the other cat, things like that. But at the same time, I can't help but to notice, and I will always say, that's not a cat.
That's amazing. And that's great that there's somebody like you to help folks who really just want to love and provide a home, but something's off. I see it, when we walk dogs, and that's a simple example. When we walk the dogs and we see, I just don't understand it. Someone's got, usually it's at least two dogs, and that dog, it just is really aggressive. And there's a woman I'm thinking about. I've never even spoken to her. We can't get near her or her little dogs, but she's constantly saying no, and straining to hold them back. And I think, ugh, how could you? I couldn't. I just couldn't. We would have to get help to
Yeah, you
have
have to get
animals.
help. And that would be animal communication, EFT, training, and managing it differently.
Yeah, because it's human-based, isn't it? I mean, anyway, I believe it. I know animals can come with their own set of situations, but isn't it also highly driven, if not completely driven, by the human they're with?
I would say probably 85% is driven by the human, and then there is that factor for what they came in with or what their last household was. And so with that situation, what people always think is, "Oh, my dog is protecting me." It's like, no, your dog is protecting himself because you're not exhibiting emotional leadership. And it doesn't have to be alpha, it doesn't have to be tough. It's just that you are safe in the world, and then the animal feels like, "Okay, I'm going to be safe no matter what I do." And safety is at the bottom of every one of our needs, It is at the bottom of every one of everybody's needs. So being safe with a dog yapping at the end is going to change the dynamic for the dog. But instead, she's in defense. No, right? And for me, I've learned that some of the communication, even if it's assertive like that, is still necessary because they're also telling me something. They're in that case, they're saying, "I'm just not safe." And so I wouldn't say no to that. I'd say, okay, what do I need to do?
That's really huge. And I really appreciate what you're saying about safety, and it's exactly correct. Safety, security, protection, and love. You know, it's a beautiful recipe. And it's not that long ago, but within the past year, I suddenly became cognizant of how I speak to my dogs, because boy, do they feel safe. And I mean, I love on them so much. And I'm always telepathically and vocally speaking words of not affirmation like I am, but just, you're so beautiful, you're so healthy, you're so wonderful, you're so. And I really feel that from my heart. I think they just feel my whole energy emanates like, ah, so much that I cherish them. And it became clear to me I could speak the same way. Like, I'm a good mommy. And what if I spoke that way to me? And I started translating that to myself, whether I did something wrong and I was completely forgiving and it was fine, you know, or laughing about something and making light of something. And it's really changed how I feel tremendously toward myself, my life, everything. So my dogs taught me how to talk to myself.
Right, it's like the wounded inner child. It's dog inner child work.
Totally. I'm born in the year of the dog too, so I'm sure that weaves in there. Back to the animal chakras. This animal chakra healing that you write about in this book, how do the chakras show up in the animals that is different than how it shows up in the humans?
Well, it shows up very similarly, except that what we don't recognize, say for example, let's take those little barkity bark bark dogs, right? The first thing that I would do would be doing some, I've got Elsa now in my lap, doing something from the top of her head all the way to the end of her tail, and creating that sense of safety in that hind end. And when we see animals who are afraid, yeah, that woke her up. When we see animals who are afraid, often their hind end is so tight. And so then those dogs either become timid or reactive. And so what's different is basically how we work with it. You know, you and I can intellectualize like, oh, I need to feel safer. But for them, we have to set up safety. And in the second chakra, you know, it's fertility, creativity, and one-on-one relationships like with humans. But we've spay and neuter animals. So then, you know, it's that power center gets, the light gets dimmed a bit. So what we have to help them feel their power, help them feel their connectivity to everything around them. And that one-on-one relationship isn't just, you know, it's not just you and me. It's like you said, your two dogs before were so connected. Like it's their one-on-one relationship with other animals, with other people, with the groomer, with everyone. And then the third chakra, it's the one place where you can really see the physiological and the behavioral come together, and that's in the form of anxiety. And so if you're going to treat anxiety, and the base of anxiety would be sadness, fear, and anger, you could do it through training to give them confidence, as well as probiotics and helping their tummy. And then with the fourth chakra, that again can, like, people can hold fear, can hold grief and joy simultaneously. And they really model that for us often. They can be in a heap in the corner, very sad, but the minute you get them outside and they start smelling, you know, they go into curiosity, which can bring joy in a minute. You know, curiosity, wonder, seeking, and then we find joy and play in a moment. So, I think they're just more pure in their essence of each of their chakras and how it plays out. And even up to the top three, the expression, it's just like with that dog barking, like, all right, tell me, what is it you really have going on there? Because I'll help. And so it's not letting them be in a frenetic expression, because if they're heard, then they don't need, that might be a habit that then needs to be broken. But for the most part, there's something that and sadly that woman isn't getting. And then the third eye, like for humans, I mean, I think that's where they do see spirits, where they do see things, but they can also experience a frustration when each of their senses go. And so it's a really important, tender thing when as they age, to just be mindful of that. And the crown chakra for them is really about trust and their agency, and their trust often is related to us. So we're almost like the agent of their ability to trust the universe.
Oh, that was so lovely taking us through that. And this is such an unplanned question, but it's so coming up. Shelby has a heart condition. She's got regurgitation, a heart murmur, a leaky valve. And she's been on medication. She's doing amazing on medication. She was not amazing in the beginning. She had syncopes and all sorts of, it was a, rough in the beginning. But I got her to the right doctor and she is doing really well. There is a open heart surgery in Japan at a place called Jasmine Clinic. It's world renowned for dogs specifically, and their success rate is like 98%. And I often find myself, this is where I have trouble because I am doing a good job and I'm doing the best I can. The surgery I know is highly invasive, and I also know it could change her life if we're still waiting to find out if she is it constitutionally it's okay for her. But if she is, I feel like, does she want it? You're talking about agency and sovereignty, and does she want it, or what is her choice? And then how do we know things like that? How do we communicate with them?
I have a feeling you communicate very well with your Shelby. My sense is you wouldn't have gone this far if you weren't co-creating this experience with her.
It's interesting because I have said, if you go to Japan, you don't just go get surgery and come home. You live there for a month because, right, there is the recovery is it's dramatic, and they want to make sure you're there and that they can still have appointments after the surgery, make sure everything's okay before they put you back on a plane. So I keep saying, like, this little baby is going to give me the adventure of a lifetime to go live in Japan for a month. Like, that was not in my bucket list, but
That it wouldn't have gotten to this. And even if it doesn't come to pass, in many ways, she's co-creating dreaming with you.
Thank you. That's really lovely. There's a skeptic out there, Joan, who's like, which isn't typically my audience anyway, but if they hear animal communication, they think, oh, that's projection. What has convinced you beyond a shadow of a doubt that telepathic interspecies communication, it's real, it's measurable, it's available to everyone?
Well, the way that I teach is very measurable and verification oriented. So it's step by step by step. And even when people come to class and they only get one or two things and they're very frustrated, I always say, it is so much easier for me to teach you off of one or two things than it is for me to take someone who comes in and says, oh, your dog likes cotton candy. There are those people that are just kind of, they've got stories and so only some of what they're saying lands, right? And it's, I'd rather teach the person who doesn't trust themselves and is willing and humble enough to go step by step by step And then it's just every bit of it is verifiable. And it's, sort of like words or phrases or things I wouldn't think of that landed in my mind. And that for me was what, what gave me confidence. And it doesn't mean that you can't be doubtful and confident at the same time. I think that the doubt keeps us humble. But it's funny because I just locked those people out of my world about 30 years ago. So I don't even know there are skeptics out there.
Some people talk about, I don't know how to find my tribe, or where do I go to talk with people like this? I'm like, really?
Yeah.
That is my whole world. All the events I speak at, all the places I go, moderating panels, this is it. This is, I can't imagine any other conversation. It's so beautiful that we're all on the same page, and there's this really tremendous awareness. And I think it's very hopeful too at this
Yeah.
interesting time.
Me too. We have to find at least one other person, thankfully, like you, I've got it's my world.
And how can people find you, Joan? What are you working on? What's next? And talk about your book as well, besides your programs.
My book, Animal Chakra Healing, is out, and I've got online classes that are starting right away. I do a spring and fall kind of semester, if you will. And basically my website, joanrenquette.com, but also I have a free Facebook group called Learn to Communicate with Animals with Joan. And I do lives in there, and we have all sorts of fun. So it's a great place to kind of get a sense of me and what I'm about. Without having to commit. And then I have I'm going to be in the Seattle area in July and Denver in August, and at various bookstores and doing things in Southern California. So if you go on my website, I'm kind of all over the place.
Excellent. Great. That's joanrenquette.com. And Joan, this is Dare to Dream. What do you next dare to dream? What are your future dreams and goals?
I have a big, I have a few. I have a project called the Shelter Project, and we go in and work with animals who are unadoptable in these shelters, and we do animal communication and EFT. And so I'm daring to dream that we're going to empty the shelters, and I'm daring to dream that my groups, well, any groups can help the anti-poaching units around the world, and that animals can be seen for who they truly are, and that we finally start working with them. That's all.
They're beautiful dreams. Thank you so much for coming on the show today and for all the beautiful work you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and thank you for the beautiful work you're doing.
Oh, much appreciated. I end today's show with this reminder. Perhaps the question is not whether animals are speaking, but whether we are finally quiet enough to hear them. Animals do not merely live beside us, they walk beside our soul. And when we learn to listen beyond words or woofs or meows, they remind us that healing is a relationship, love is a frequency, and consciousness wears many forms. Next week on the podcast, I'm featuring Maja Deaust, known as the Witch of the Dawn. She's a practicing witch and a scholar of alchemy and occult lore. This has been Dare to Dream. So if this episode moved you, share it with someone who's waking up too on the path, because the right message at the right time can change everything.
Thanks for joining us this week on Dare to Dream. Make sure to visit our website, debbiedashinger.com. That's DEBBI. DACHINGER. You can subscribe to the show on YouTube and all major podcast sites, so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in this program, we'd appreciate a like and comment, or tell a friend about the podcast. That will help us out as well. And if you like this conversation, you might want to check out Debbie's shamanic healing programs. And Debbie is available for coaching to write your book, and her company takes your finished book to guaranteed international bestseller. Be sure to subscribe for our next episode of Dare to Dream Podcast with Debbie Dashner, your number one transformation conversation.